Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, folks. How you going? Adam O'Brien here, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. Keen to get into particularly this film and, of course, the previous film, which we're going to be talking about. Now, what I mean by that is 1995's Mortal Kombat and, of course, the new adaptation, which was made out here in Australia and starred some of my favorite action stars and, just got to say, all-round actors in general. We have an amazing cast in this film, and the film itself is actually a really good adaptation of a game that I really think all of you out there that have grown up in the 90s and even up to now playing video games in particular, if you remember the old days of the 90s and the arcades of Mortal Kombat 1 and 2 and just popping in those dollar coins and trying to get the end and face, of course, Shang Tsung. It was one hell of a game and really was an atmospheric game in terms of fatalities and stuff like that, the characters, the special moves. It was a real martial arts fantasy universe, and I gotta say, folks, one of my all-time favorite games, alongside, of course, Street Fighter, which is still to this day, out of the more animated style of games or less realistic looking in terms of not photographically, you know, it's particularly, I think that was the groundbreaking thing with Mortal Kombat, that when the difference between the two was that everything was kind of more real in the way it was looking graphics-wise, even though obviously it was all animated and done in the day with the technology they had. And Street Fighter as well, still to this day, one of the greatest games, and I'm still got it on Super Nintendo now with the mini Nintendo or the mini Super NES, which, you know, I break out from time to time and enjoy playing. Usually is Ryu. I've always liked playing that character. It's, you know, again, it's the karate in me. I always enjoy that too. So we're going to get into that tonight, and we're really going to get into what makes not only this new movie so good, and I think they've really gone all out to definitely start something here. You know, it's going to be the start of a franchise, hopefully, as in a trilogy or whatever. And hopefully they shoot it all out here in Australia, because it's been one great thing for the local film community here in Australia to do. And again, great to see an action film made here as well. You know, obviously we've got, in about a year's time, Furiosa, with, of course, you know, being the prequel to, well, Fury Road, and we get to see some car action, some post-apocalyptic stuff here in Australia, but at the same time, it doesn't have the martial arts that this one has, and of course, the mythology. Whether it be this game or obviously Street Fighter, both have such a rich mythology, and that comes from the characters, obviously building up the worlds. I mean, the world building in both games was always extraordinary. What I always found, in particularly with Mortal Kombat, was it was a game that, you know, as each different, you know, episode came out, each different game came out, it was always building on what came before. And obviously there's a new generation of fans coming along, or in this case, players of the game, and experiencing it all over again. So I think whether it's the 95 film or this new adaptation, there's just so much to enjoy. And obviously too, the animated editions of the story as well. There's a couple of DVDs out of that, and it's always been great. You can also get a lot of great action figures, which we'll talk about tonight as well. It is an interesting universe, which I've always thought, you know, could have an interesting adaptation that was a bit richer than the one that came before. The 95 one was just such an amazing one for the time. You know, it had a little bit of the game in it, as well as some just really interesting ideas in terms of building a universe. So that's what you're going to look forward to tonight here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. But before we get into that, let's let you know how to catch this show and many others like it on both the Lethal Mullet Network and, of course, the Phantom Podcast Network. G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Little Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Little Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, so who remembers the film Mortal Kombat back in 1995? And it had a sequel called Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It came out in 97. These were two films which, at the time, were pretty important, I think, with game adaptations and stuff like that. Certainly were a lot of, fans that were really getting into it at the time. I liked it for the action itself and, of course, the touch on martial arts. I'd certainly not been studying martial arts at the time. I finished studying martial arts around about 1994, so it would have been just before the film came out, and got into wanting to play music. So I kind of think that this film even rekindled my love and passion for martial arts, which was great. And the film was done by, of course, Paul W.S. Anderson, who's done a number of different, adaptations of Resident Evil and a number of the sequels of Resident Evil. He's also worked on one of my favorite sci-fi horror films, and of course, that is starring Sam Neill and, of course, the one, the only Morpheus from The Matrix, and, of course, Jason Isaacs. And, this is a film which I think really deserves, a little bit more return in terms of people checking it out again. And that is, of course, Event Horizon, which was one that was interesting out here. It was quite a big VHS hit out here in Australia. But I think the big thing is that it sort of rekindled the thoughts of Alien with a little bit more, I suppose, new age technology in terms of how the spaceships were done. And again, the horror. It was a straight up horror film as well. Again, interesting, but at the same time, it's one of those films, particularly with Paul W.S. Anderson, who, is no stranger to science fiction as well as doing fantasy and stuff like that. He also did Aliens vs. Predator. He also did the film, which, I think a lot of people forget that he did. And I know you're going to remember this one because we've talked about it here on the show with Kevin the Raider, who writes it, of course, Carl Wagner before. And that is, of course, Soldier, which is kind of a side sequel, not an actual sequel, but a side sequel to the Blade Runner universe. So obviously he's done, different areas that are going to be popping up in those ways. So he's done Death Race as well, and Death Race 2 he was involved in as well. Obviously Pandorum's another one that he was involved in to a certain extent. And this is, again, where he becomes somebody that's involved in a production sense as a producer. One of the more interesting ones, of course, was in 2011 he did The Three Musketeers. He also did Pompeii. Where he actually directed that one, from what I remember. But again, one that he always seems to come back to is, of course, Resident Evil. And Resident Evil, certainly because his wife is a part of that cast as well. Again, great films, what they are in terms of adaptations. They've always been successful overseas. And which brings us back to one of the other adaptations he did, which, of course, is Mortal Kombat. What I remember about Mortal Kombat is going to a cinema back in the 90s, and we just watched a Jean-Claude Van Damme film, which had come out, and One of the interesting things about that one was the film was finishing, and I was coming out of the cinema with a friend of mine, and you could hear the end of Mortal Kombat, and it was one of the Mortal Kombat soundtracks, tunes playing, coming out of the cinema, and it really got me, you know, in the mood to want to see what this film's like. We always had the games. We had the original Super Nintendo, and the second game I bought on that was Mortal Kombat. I played all the arcade games, and I do believe at the time we were trying to complete Mortal Kombat 2. It had all these new characters, and again, it was, you know, the new thing to play at the cinemas, because at the cinemas you had the time zone at the front of each cinema, so you could wait around before your film came out and play whether it's Alien versus Predator, the arcade game, Alien 3, the game, which of course had the gun there and you would shoot first person like that. That Afterburner, which I do believe is still in some time zones in Australia, believe it or not. But you won't find a lot of fighting games. They've actually stripped those out of most arcades here. But of course, Mortal Kombat 2 was one of the more popular ones. And always before we had the idea of Tekken and other games like that, it was always the game to play with your friends, particularly Mortal Kombat 2. Mortal Kombat itself was such an interesting idea. It's that sort of like Bloodsport, isn't it? You know, it's a group of fighters from all around the world. But in this stage, they're not just fighting for a trophy, right? They're fighting for more than that, because this involves the gods, guys like Raiden, Goro, Shang Tsung, and the like. So it was always an interesting, more maybe exotic in terms of fantasy for this one to come through. In some ways, I always thought that there was a hint, particularly from that fantastical martial arts sense of films like Big Trouble in Little China, where you do have gods involved. There is an immortal sort of sense to the story, which only enriches the mythology of what we're going through. The film itself was one that I think my generation really enjoyed. It wasn't a huge hit critically, but it was certainly one that you know, is certainly stand the test of time when it comes to rewatching. You know, we had everything in there. We had Sub-Zero, Scorpion, Johnny Cage, Sonya Blade, and of course Kano, played by, of course, Trevor Goddard. And again, he really relished the opportunity of playing such a juicy, meaty role as a villain. Great series, you know, and obviously it then went into a sequel. Interesting casting with Christoph Lambert as Raiden. And of course, we pretty much just have him in the Raiden outfit doing what he does as Christoph Lambert. You know, he's kind of a mentor figure in this, very much like what we see Raiden in the other adaptations, and particularly this new one with Tadanobu Asano playing Raiden perfectly. He really plays it well. In some ways, this is like Bloodsport, you know? This is a competition, martial arts competition, where the end of each can basically be seen to be that Shang Tsung will take the souls of each of the fighters. Shang Tsung's basically this character that's villainous, that's able to take the souls and power of each individual fighter and make it his own. And of course, in turn, he could pretty much turn into those fighters. And that's what was an interesting premise, or at least what I gathered from what I'd played of it. You know, I don't know the universe that well, but from the many times I've watched it, that's what I gathered from it. You know, he's got that sort of power in him to, you know, pretty much do anything when it came to recalling. I think a little bit like the Highlander universe, you know, the quickening, or even in some terms, the Bene Gesserit in Dune, where they can recall the many lives of past generations. The Kwisatz Haderach of Paul Atreides, where he's able to look into, you know, the past and also the future, see exactly where things are heading. And I think that's something that's similar, not the same, but similar with Shang Tsung in this universe. So the soundtrack, definitely the cast as well, is what made this 95 film so interesting for me, and one that is a pleasure to you know, revisit over the years. I think the great one about Mortal Kombat is that it's a real rock and roll trip. You know, it's a very much a 90s film. And it's certainly, you know, written in such a way that it sort of follows the action beats of martial arts and action films of the time. It starred Lyndon Ashby, Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa, Robin Shaw, Bridget Wilson, Talisa Soto, and, of course, Christoph Lambert, based on the 92 game of the original name, obviously, too. So at the end of the day, the idea is that they have to protect Earth. The heroes have to protect it against the outworld forces, or these evil forces from basically hell. It's an interesting film because it uses both the ideas and elements from both the first and second game. And to some extent, it sort of brings the best of that world together. And you get real interesting sort of idea of that with, obviously, to the action, which, you know, uses both characters from both areas, basically, and locations as well. So we got Lyndon Ashby playing Johnny Cage. He does really well in this. He's obviously one of the key heroes of the film. Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa plays Shang Tsung, and he is one of those great actors that's able to really not only revel in the role, such a great role, but, you know, he obviously is having fun with it, and, you know, it gives it such weight. Then we have Robin Shaw as Liu Kang, and again, he's one of the big heroes of this one. And Liu Kang's, you know, such a great character in itself. And I think the great thing about this one is the martial artistry that he shows in this is just amazing. We've got Bridget Wilson, which you might know from, of course, Last Action Hero and many other films, and she plays Sonya Blade in this. We also have, of course, as we mentioned earlier, Christoph Lambert as Raiden. Now, I'm going to say, I do like his take on Raiden. It's a bit of fun. There's a bit of comedy to it. It certainly hits his usual Lambert comedic beats, and, of course, his laugh. That's all in there. But, you know, the one that really does Raiden for me, and this is outside of the live-action world, is, of course, Richard Epcar, the amazing voice actor of Ben Dixon from Robotech, and, of course, known as Batau in Ghost of the Shell, many other roles. He's played the Joker as well. But his Raiden is just bang on perfect. So the film itself was interesting enough that it obviously generated enough interest from 95 to bring on a sequel. You know, considering it's a pretty massive hit on a budget of around about $18 million, the box office was over $120 million, which is pretty huge. And of course, it came from New Line Cinema. I kind of felt back in the day in the 90s, New Line Cinema were just punching out heaps of movies at the time. And again, really, really interesting sort of idea. The sequel was called Mortal Kombat Annihilation, directed by John R. Leonetti. It brought some of the characters back, but not all of them. And again, sometimes different actors playing other roles as well. Robin returned as Liu Kang, Talisa Soto came back as Katana. We also had a change in the Raidens. We had James Remar play Raiden in this one. Now, the other actors in this, we also had Shao Kahn. Now, Shao Kahn was played by the amazing actor Brian Thompson. Now, if you remember Brian Thompson, obviously bigger roles that he's been in terms of action films, Wrong Bet, or in terms of other ones, obviously, his big breakout one was in Terminator, where he played one of the punks at the start. He said, "Wash day tomorrow, nothing clean, right?" He's also the bad guy in Cobra, if you remember right. So he's in that too. So he also had Chinook in this one, played by Raina Sean. We also had Margeen Holden play Shiva. We had an amazing array of other, both martial artists and actors playing the other roles. We had J.J. Perry as Cyrax, Scorpion, Noob Saibot, and the voice of Scorpion was Ed Boon. We also had Keith Cook play Sub-Zero, Dana He as Melina, and we also had Tyrone Wiggins play Rain. And this one, Chris Conrad played Johnny Cage. Again, you get sort of a little bit of the newer characters, and again, more from newer editions of the game and stuff like that in this too. The film is often on cable channel out here in Australia. It's, again, not as successful as the first one, but it still made more money than its budget, made $20 million more. So it still made a tiny profit and, of course, came from New Line Cinema. So, again, I still feel like we were getting these great big adaptations back in the day, which, you know, were probably bigger VHS hits than they were at the cinema. Now, there's also a couple of interesting things that popped up in between these adaptations and the 2021 film, which came out recently. So there was also two television series which came out, one in 96 called Mortal Kombat Defenders of the Realm. And there was also a live-action prequel called Mortal Kombat Conquest, which came out in 98 and 99. The first one was an animated series. So they've done this a few times where there's been an animated edition or vice versa, in this case, a prequel come before it. And it gives them a chance to obviously spread out and build the lore, build the mythology. And again, they were really watched mainly by the fans, I think, and really were ones that built up characters that, you know, may not have got a chance in the live actions to get that real big, you know, history or vice versa to them. Building that lore is the big thing about this universe. Obviously, between characters like Sub-Zero and Scorpion, and even to this stage, obviously, like the godlike characters like Shang Tsung, and of course, even Goro. And here, folks, in the original 95 film, I bet you didn't know that Raiden was, at one stage, possibly going to be Sean Connery. He was offered the role, but eventually turned it down. Can you just imagine Sean Connery, yeah, coming down here and going, saying, yes, I'm here. My name is, of course, Raiden. I'm the god of storms and, of course, rain and, of course, the power of the skies. And I'm here to watch this legendary mortal battle for the witch and the martial artistry. This was definitely my favorite of the video game adaptations that were out. Mortal Kombat 1995 is just always a pleasure to revisit, not only for the action, but the characters, and of course, I think the end of the day, the way this film was shot was one that was always great in terms of the sets that we used, the locations, and out of Paul W.S. Anderson's films, it's probably my favorite next to Event Horizon. You know, I like Soldier, always loved Soldier, but I think that comes at third place for me. Not a huge fan of his Resident Evil films. The first one's good, but without a doubt, Mortal Kombat is my favorite of the video game adaptations that he's done. And Trevor Goddard is just so good as Kano. You know, before this new edition of Kano that we're seeing in the new film, Trevor is without a doubt doing everything that he does in Man of War, which we've talked about in a previous episode. You know, he's really hamming it up as a villain, but also enjoying the power of Kano, you know, this mercenary character. And he plays it with such fun, but also such deadly force. You know, it's an amazing role. So to the late, great Trevor Goddard, well done. And the film itself gets a whopping 4.5 out of 5 here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know? Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. And, enjoy the show.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, folks, I've got to admit, going into this movie, I didn't know what to expect because we had quite a bit of time since the 1995 film, which was, for pop culture at the time and particularly video game addicts and fighting game addicts, people that were into Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, I mean, that was the target market of that film. you know, we got pretty much exactly what we want. Bang for buck adaptation. This time around, you know, it's so many years later. And, you know, if it's 20 plus years later, then we're looking at a time when films in particular have moved on and become, you know, particularly narrative-wise and story-wise, much more in depth with character building and building a world. Good examples of that over the last 20 or so years are probably the Dark Knight trilogy, definitely the James Bond era of Daniel Craig and others, you know, that have really spent the time to build a universe and one that's quite believable. Even the new Kelvin universe of Star Trek have been pretty tight as far as that. And I think that's something that this one was one that I didn't expect to do that, but it did. And obviously they're trying to build, you know, I suppose a little bit like the Marvel universe and Star Wars, Star Trek, all the different franchises, trying to build something that will be basically the ground floor of this massive tentpole franchise. It's not the first time, obviously, we had adaptations, and it's certainly not the kind of franchise that people not know anything about. The games have been out there since the early 90s, so we know the universe to a certain extent, but it's never been given the depth and quality that this adaptation is. So going down to the movies, when I saw this earlier in the year, and you know, really not expecting to have such a great film, particularly one that I had no idea at the time was shot here in Australia, in South Australia, would be the quality that it is. South Australia is known for, you know, having great areas to shoot films in. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome was shot there. Parts of Gallipoli was shot there. Parts of even a great American franchise, but we all know the Chronicles of Riddick franchise, Pitch Black, was shot there as well. You know, great, great series of films. And again, it's the location. Even Russell Crowe went there to shoot his Gallipoli drama, The Water Diviner, which is, again, worth checking out, folks. It's a film set post-World War I, about a father trying to find his son's bodies that that died in the Gallipoli campaign. So what's interesting about Mortal Kombat is, going into it, you really get a sense of the universe in this. And that's what I loved about it. Now, this is, you know, before getting into the actual film, I just want to get my feelings out of what this really did. And I think it's the grounding of the franchise itself. You know, going from the start of the film where we get the relationship between Scorpion in Japan at the time versus, obviously, Sub-Zero's members of the Chinese assassin gang or whatever it is, that ninja clan coming over to eradicate the other. And I think what's great about that is that we get this sort of mythos, which, to be honest, as somebody that played the game back in the 90s, I really didn't know too much about. I knew they were rivals, but not to the point that they are here. And obviously there's been a lot of material since, whether it be in comic books and other animated features, as well as the games itself too, which is really, really interesting. And only wants me, you know, as a fan, you know, really onus is on me to go and check that out too, because I really wanted to see more about what that is after watching the film. So the director, Simon McQuaid, has done an amazing job in really bringing this together and giving it gravity. You know, I think that's the thing, or giving it, you know, grit, which I think it needed to be grounded to a certain extent, because it is a very fantastical franchise. There's so many elements of magic, if you like, particularly with Shang Tsung and other characters, Raiden, that we need to have that in there. And of course, the different universes, or the different verses, if you like, in this. So I loved how it sort of time traveled a little bit, or in this case, we saw the earlier days of those characters. Then we jump forward, so many generations forward, where we meet one of Scorpion's family who's in the future. And this character is the one that we follow all the way through it. And what I love about this, this was a new character, one that's new to the franchise, is part of Scorpion's family line, and one that doesn't know anything about you know, the forebears that he had. And that's what makes it interesting. Bringing in new elements to a franchise that we know well is a way that we can have a window into that universe. You still get your Liu Kang, you still get your Kung Lao, and you certainly see all the great characters that you want to see in this. So this is directed by Simon McQuaid, screenplay by Greg Russo and Dave Callahan, and it is a pretty damn good script. It's a grounded one. We get enough time with all the characters. I think they've done a really good job, actually, on it. It feels at times like a big Marvel, like Avengers sort of film. I think that is what makes it interesting. The storyboard was by Greg Russo and Oren Uziel. And it's really, again, I think building on the franchise, building on the grounding of this franchise. And to some degree, yes, I think that, it's not Mortal Kombat yet. It's almost like it's building towards Mortal Kombat, and I think that's what it's building towards. It was produced by James Wan, Todd Garner, and, of course, director Simon McQuaid and E. Bennett Walsh. And it's starring, obviously, this amazing cast, which we're about to talk about in a second. Now, the film came out in April this year, April 8th, and it's done great guns, did really, really well. Budget was roughly about $55 billion, and the box office so far, $83.6 million. So safe to say, we'll probably see some sequels of this soon. And of course, the franchise has been around so long. I think the great thing about it is that people knew the work or knew the world itself too. So the movie had been ready to go into production, I think as far back as 2016, where James Wan was announced as a producer, along with obviously getting Simon McQuaid in to direct the film in November 2016. So that's it's been sitting around for a little while. And obviously, it didn't help that we had, obviously, COVID hit in the middle of, was it 2020, This is when a lot of those big tentpole films were going to be dropping. And of course, it was delayed so that we could actually get out in the cinema and experience it. Now, it's one thing to watch it at home, but this really is a great cinema experience, particularly when we are getting some of the scenes of Sub-Zero going into our world and causing havoc, trying to find the ancestors of obviously Scorpion in this too. It's shot in locations all over South Australia and Adelaide Studios in Adelaide. So it's great that they could use Australia at a time when we'd pretty much, particularly in 2020, we'd cornered off a lot of areas where COVID had gone rampant. It hasn't been good since, folks, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. So that's in New South Wales and Victoria, where right now it's all over the shop. it's good in 2020 that we were able to bring some productions down here to Australia and really, I suppose, give the chance for the industry to get a bit of a kick, a bit of free kick in some ways. Tom Hanks was out here on the Gold Coast shooting a Elvis Presley film, but he actually did get COVID, unfortunately, but he was okay afterwards, after 2 weeks of quarantine too. Now, the film was shot to go out on HBO Max, the streaming service that's aligned with Warner Brothers, and it also go out simultaneously within IMAX in theaters April 23. So it's interesting that they had that sort of a thing go out at the time too, which is really interesting. Again, it's something that's happening with Dune and other films where, again, they're sort of trying to aim to have simultaneous release in both streaming services in that. And look, you look at the obviously the box office, it hasn't hurt it. It's certainly made some money. It got mixed reviews from a lot of, those that are involved in the critics' reviews and stuff like that of the movie itself. But there's been some great, feedback about the stars. In particular, obviously, we've got, characters like, particularly Hiroyuki Sanada. How can you not love his work? Everything he does is just amazing. If you really want to see some great work by Hiroyuki, which he always does, by the way, you need to see The Twilight Samurai. It is an amazing film. Obviously, he's done a lot of work. I mean, we're talking about a protege of Shinichi Chiba, Sonny Chiba, the late, great Sonny Chiba. May he rest in peace. Hiroyuki Sanada was actually in a lot of the films that he did in the 1980s. as he was part of, I do believe it was the stunt school or the action school, I think they called it, that Shinichi Chiba had. And Chiba-san ran such an amazing school for the up-and-coming actors and stuff like that. And Hiroyuki would have been in his probably early 20s or late teens at the time, was involved in some of those great ones. We're actually going to have another Shinichi Chiba special soon where we'll talk about some of those, I think, older films which, you know, in the 70s, he really took a stranglehold of action and gave it something different that a lot of other martial artists and actors in general were not doing. And, you know, some of, particularly the Street Fighter films, which we kind of talked about before, were quite harsh, you know, and particularly the depiction of martial arts was definitely a lot different than what you'd see from a lot of the Shaw Brothers films, and in particular, a lot of those other, even some of the great stuff that Bruce Lee was doing. There was just something harsh, cruel, painful about the style of, you know, the character of Terry Suguri and Street Fighter. You know, there's just pain. And obviously the characters involved in that too, and obviously the actors, the work on it, is something that the one and only Quentin Tarantino absolutely loves. Loved it so much, he put it in his script for, of course, True Romance. But the great thing is that this film in particular really gets one thing right, and that is faithful to the world of Mortal Kombat, because it's not just one area of Mortal Kombat. They've really gone all out and brought it together to make something that's really interesting. So let's have a look at a bit of the plot here, folks, and I won't go into too deep because I want you all to go out and experience this film, because I think it really is a stepping stone to a series of films. I mean, this kind of feels like The Hobbit is to The Lord of the Rings. It's not a massive film, but it's enough of an appetizer for a Mortal Kombat trilogy, which I hope they do. So in Japan in the 1600s, so in the 17th century, there's a whole bunch of assassins heading out to take on Hanzo Hasashi. Hanzo Hasashi is the scorpion-to-be. He's a retainer, a lord of a clan, of samurai or ninja in this case, of the Shirai Ryu Ninja Clan. Now, you notice just a quick diversion here, folks, where I say ninja samurai clan. Well, maybe not in this fictional world. Ninja were samurai. Now, we've talked about this before in some segments of the show, Lethal Mullet. You only need to look it up. You'll find in a lot of the different material, which I'm talking about from Japan, not from outside sources, from the Bunsen Shukai, from the actual ninja scrolls, you'll find the real thing, and that is ninja were samurai. They were of the samurai class. The samurai class weren't just the knights. You know, they were more than just that. You know, they were clerks, they were lords, they were everything. But the ninja were part of that. So, it's right to say that. So, hunting them down is the Lin Kuei assassins headed by Bi-Han. Of course, Bi-Han is, of course, Sub-Zero, as we'll find out soon. So, as Hanzo is tending to his family, everyone is slaughtered. And by the time he gets back, his wife and child, plus the rest of the ninja, are all dead. And, of course, he then goes head-to-head with, of course, Bi-Han. And it's a really, really interesting fight. Again, we get to see some of the weapons that will an influence on Scorpion as well. And of course, we're talking about that amazing spear-like knife that he uses. And it is one of those interesting ones which I have in my own possession right now as well. It is something that not usually used in the way it does. It's more of a Chinese influence of the rope darts and stuff like that. Of course, we're talking about a set of knives which he would use later with a chain. Here you go, come here. Of course, we're talking about Scorpion's iconic weapon. The weapon we're talking about is a series of knives called kunai. Kunai can be used as both a knife and also can be used as also one tethered to a chain or tethered to a rope as basically a rope dart, which is a wushu weapon, but it's also in this case one used by ninja. kind of like a shuriken. You can use it like that as well. But in this case, he used it as one that was from farming implement tied around, and we literally see him dispatch a whole heap of different, obviously, characters. And when he goes up against Bihan, he's using that weapon as well. This would become his signature weapon, although later in the film, you're going to get him to see him use other weapons. And Hiroyuki Sanada is one guy who's, whether, you know, whatever weapon you give him, he uses it in such a way that is expressive extension of himself. So he really has the heart of samurai in him. So that's what's so interesting about it. Now, after that, from the lands of Outworld and the Earth, the defeated Earth realm, obviously one of the big things that comes in here is the character of Raiden, played by Tadanobu Asano, one of my favorite actors. This guy is amazing. Now, if you've ever seen the movie Mongol, he played Genghis Khan, and he does it so well. He has a presence unlike any other actor out there. He has a real, you know, if there's something you can pull weight from others when it comes to the, you know, drawing an audience, he has that ability. And then that film he really did, that's one you really need to check out if you haven't seen Asano's work. He's just one of those great actors that really has work that's just on another level. Obviously, he's involved in the Thor films. He was actually dispatched in Ragnarok, along with the Heroes 3, which was really sad because I love those characters. They really are great. And again, you know, he's been in so many Hollywood films of late. You know, he's one of Japan's greatest when it comes to, you know, being both an international star, but also starring some of the greatest stuff coming out of Japan as well. In this one, he plays a very tough, the fair and gritty version of Raiden, which Christophe Lambert was not in the 95 film. This is a lot different, but it really works for what it is. And, you know, there's a real, you know, mentor quality to the way that he brings it through. Obviously, it's part of what it is. Now, he obviously takes away the saved heir of the Hanzo Hasashi line. The blood of Hasashi will grow. And obviously what that means is obviously down the line we will see the dragon mark, which will be something that will drag all of the different fighters back into obviously fighting in Outworld, or the conquered Outworld, if you say, in this stage. Now, what great things about this is that Outworld obviously is this sort of negative purgatory, if you like, of hell. It's sort of a little bit of that, certainly the way it's portrayed in this, which you get to see little bits of as it sort of starts out. But what it really is it's hell. I mean, they shot it in a quarry, you know, with this earthy sort of, you know, quality to it that is very otherworldly. I wouldn't say it kind of like Mars, like I suppose to some extent, and you can certainly see a Mad Max vibe to it. It certainly looks like Barter Town from Beyond Thunderdome in those films. So we jump forward in time where we meet a character by the name of Cole Young, now played by Louis Tan. Cole Young is a MMA fighter who is in this stage going through his early stages of a fight career. Now, eagle-eyed fans will notice that the fight promoter, trainer, whatever you want to call him, in this is a famous Australian actor who was in the movie Chopper. That's right, the Eric Banner movie about Chopper Reed, Mark Chopper Reed, the criminal manhunter. What's great about it is he played a character by the name of Keithy George, who basically gets what's coming to him at the start of the film. And he's in a lot of movies. He was in the movie Rover with Guy Pearce, which is kind of like a modern take on Mad Max to a certain extent. It was a sort of a chase film. Again, great actor. You can see him a lot of Australian TV. But again, he plays, you know, alongside Cole Young in this. Quite interesting. Now, Cole and his family are tracked down by a guy by the name of Special Forces Major Jackson. In this case, Jax Briggs. Now, obviously, if you know Mortal Kombat, you'll know who that is. That is, of course, the character of Jax, who's basically trying to find the characters that have the dragon mark, all right? Because they're trying to find a way into the Mortal Kombat, if you like. His partner in this is Sonya Blade. Yeah, again, classic characters, we know. But it's grounded. She is, like in the others, a military leader. In this case, she's, along with Jax, trying to find a way into that. Cole tracks Sonya to a hideout, and basically what happens is they find that they have somebody captive by the name of Kano. Now, Kano is a character which has always been in the games from the start, and you never know quite whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. It was always set out that he was a villain in the old games, as far as I know, in the material, and he certainly is. He just had that laser eye, and he kind of looked like a gun-toting mercenary, which he is. But in this, they got an Australian comedian by the name of Josh Lawson to play the role. He's Australian actor slash comedian. Very funny guy. He even played Bond once, as in he played, it's kind of like a little documentary, if you like, about the Australian Bond. That's right, the one from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And he's great in this. He plays up the Australian element to a certain extent, particularly with the way that we swear, the way that we carry on, and our love of beer. And it's very Aussie, you know, very laconic, laid back, but at the same time, it's got the Aussie wit in the role. Some of those lines are just classic. I won't repeat it because I think you need to experience it. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, it is pretty much on the nose, perfect Aussie, as far as I see it. Now, when they do find Kano, they eventually, after being attacked by a beast from the, obviously, Outworld, he leads them to the doors, if you like, of that. What's great about it is he eventually gets they all get their dragon mark as well. And they wonder how he got the entry himself too. But again, the great thing about it is that we see some characters that are classic once we get there, which is, of course, Liu Kang and his cousin Kung Lao as well. And it's handled really, really well. Again, they're at this stage probably early in their mythology as well, which is great because, again, we're going to have time if we get some more movies to explore those characters further. A little bit like Avengers and other films like that, we're starting to see that come through in training together, getting to know each other, particularly the special moves that they're using and all that sort of stuff. What they have to do in training is build up what they call their arcana, which is basically their magic special moves, if you like. And it's driven on by whether it's pain or different ideas of how that they could get it out of them. And they all have their own. So Cole has his own. Obviously, Raiden has the power of the gods, all that, as in like the lightning and stuff like that. And there's also, different characters that come up against them, like we've got Cabal, who's one of Kano's former allies that eventually comes down to take on as well. But again, without getting into too much, we finally see Shang Tsung. We get to see Bi-Han again after he's gone out trying to attack Jax and others, where he obviously crushes Jax's arms, and then Jax get his basically replacement arms, which, if you've played the games, you know all about as well. So as that builds up, we get to start to see all the different characters in different stages of where they are, whether it's Outworld, Earthrealm, vice versa, all starting to fight for life. We get to see Goro in this, which I won't go into too much, but it's pretty funny how he's dispatched as well. And, of course, we get to see a great showdown between Cole and Bi-Han. But not before he's interrupted by the specter of Hanzo Hasashi, in that it being, of course, Scorpion. And this is great because we get to see a showdown between two mythical ninja in this. So the Lin Kuei and, of course, the Hasashi line. And what's great about it, it's done in an MMA, fight dojo. Because they've got the cage where it's set up. So it goes back to where it was at the start. What's interesting about it, it's kind of red herring from the start of the film, where we get to see Cole Young, really sort of struggling a little bit with his fights, still winning, still getting through. to where he's really become one with himself and become this sort of mythic legend, and understand exactly where he came from. A lot of that's, you know, having things like the MacGuffin of the Kunai that he finds, obviously, later, and that Scorpion is imbued with it. And it's great because when we get to see those characters back together and particularly fighting in this, you get to see Hiroyuki Sanada in his element doing all the work with Katana, with Kunai, with obviously just straight up martial arts. He's just he's well trained, put it that way. And what's great about towards the end of the film, it leaves itself open enough that we're going to see some other classic characters come into line. So the roles of course, Johnny Cage, the legendary movie actor that would obviously be a big part of the first game, and one that was at one stage going to be Jean-Claude Van Damme in the game, that is, folks, you know, before they changed it. And there's definitely elements in there that did it, so it was really, really good. I enjoyed the film. As the thunder comes in, let's chat about the cast. Louis Tan plays Cole Young. Louis is really good in this. You know, I think he's great as a lead-in in particular to this universe, our window into the world. He was born in 1987. He's a British actor and martial artist. You notice that a lot of this cast are very talented folks, and it's not just in the acting department. As we mentioned, martial arts. Now, he is in a couple of TV series that are on, I think it's Australian Netflix. You'll find him on Into the Badlands and Wu Assassins. Wu Assassins, quite a good show. I've watched a few of those. It's really, really good. And great thing about it is he's really statuesque. Like, he's a big guy. Like, he's 6'2". So, you know, I think Lewis has got a massive career ahead of him, without a doubt. He certainly has that leading man potential for action films and more. Jessica McNamee plays Sonya Blade, and she's an Australian actress, mainly known from a lot of the shows out here on Channel 7, Pack to the Rafters, and Home and Away. She's been in a few American series as well, but mainly known out here to Australians for those soap operas and stuff like that. We have Josh Lawson playing the character of Kano, and he does it so bloody well. He was in a sitcom out here called House of Lies. He's been around in a number of different roles over the years. He's got a real natural sense of humor. I think he's really quite good, actually, when it comes to that sort of stuff. When it comes to his filmography, he started out with Hey Stranger back in 2006. He's been in Law and Order. He's been in After the Credits, The Campaign, Crave, Freeloader, Free Birds, Anchorman 2. So he's actually had a chance to be in some pretty big stuff over there too. Television, he was in The Wayne Manifesto, Medivac, The Day of the Roses, Home and Away, Blue Heelers, massive, huge show out here with police and stuff like that too. He was in All Saints, Sea Patrol, Wilfred Hawk, which is based on Bob Hawke, our Prime Minister from back in the 1980s, Underbelly, House of Lies, Lowdown, and Wrecked. He was also in Hoax, the Paul Hogan story, which is quite good too. Then we've got, as Jax, we've got Mechard Brooks, very good in this. I think he's fantastic in the role too, because again, he comes in as, you know, a real, I think, you know, he's hunting down, obviously, the Dragon Mark. But he's not doing like a bounty hunter or anything like that. He's methodical, as you know, a military person would be, going by the procedure and how that they hunt down their their target. He does it really well. And obviously, when he gets his powers, like, he's a big guy, so he's able to really pull off the role of Jax well. Ludi Lin plays Liu Kang, and he's quite good. It's kind of like, it feels like the character is kind of played like it's a Padawan learner to a Jedi. In this case, you know, he's kind of still learning his ways, but he's still super powerful. He was born in Canada, and he's a model. He's been in Power Rangers, and he was also in Aquaman as well, so which was shot out here on the Gold Coast, folks, believe it or not. And of course, obviously, he plays Liu Kang in this. We've got Max Huang plays Kung Lao, very good in this. And of course, Tadanobu Asano as Lord Raiden. Here's just some of the stuff that he's been in over the years. He was Kira Yoshinaka in 47 Ronin. Now, you notice that? 47 Ronin. He also fought. Can you tell me which actor? Hiroyuki Sanada. That's right. Hanzo Hasashi. So it's interesting in this one, he basically plays the guy that saves the line of his family, which is interesting. He played Hattori Gnosuke in Zatoichi. That's, of course, B. Takeshi's take on the blind swordsman, the masseuse samurai swordsman. And again, it's Takeshi Kitano putting that one together. It's a very entertaining period film. He played Kakihara in Ichi the Killer. He was in Electric Dragon 80,000 Volts as Dragon Iron Morrison. Obviously, Temujin, who becomes Genghis Khan in Mongol. He was in the American film Battleship. And, of course, he plays Hogan in the Marvel films as well. He was in Midway, if you remember. He played Admiral Taemon Yamaguchi in that one as well. He's also a musician. He's got a he's a punk rock band, from what I remember. He was born 1973 in Yokohama, Japan. Again, really, really interesting guy. When it comes to actors, he's you know, one of those ones that gets very deep into his roles, and it's always, always good. Now, the next actor we're going to talk about is one you know well. If you are a fan of the Nolan series of Batman films, that is, of course, the one, the only Dark Knight trilogy. We're talking about Chin Han, who was in those films. He's also in the one I really enjoyed him in was Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson, that film. Really, really good in that one, where he played a character that I've always liked in that series. He was always a very, very strong role in each of the series of Ghost in the Shell. But what Chin Han's really good at is, I think, you know, at the end of the day, he could play just about any role. He's that well-versed as well. He's been in the industry for more than 20 years, and he's from Singapore. He was born in 1969. Fantastic actor. Joe Taslim, folks, of The Raid, yes, the judoka himself. That is master judo martial artist, who's from Palembang, South Sumatra, Indonesia. And he really is an amazing martial artist. You know, he's a real champion of judo. Judo is one of the most brutal martial arts out there. It's interesting that it hasn't really had the big impact in action cinema until the likes of, you know, John Wick, in terms of like international film and stuff like that. And it's brutal. I mean, the floor is going to hit you harder than any kick or punch. And that's pretty much what they do in those sort of series. Obviously, he's from the Raid series of movies, and you know, he's such a force of nature in those ones too. Amazing talent, and I think we're just going to see more and more from Joe over the years. Hiroyuki Sanada as Hanzo Hasashi Scorpion. Well, of course, he's amazing in this, and Hiroyuki, I think, will surprise you in some stuff. Obviously, he turns in a lot of great performances in international stuff, even non-martial arts and period piece stuff like Sunshine, the Danny Boyle film with obviously Michelle Yeoh, amazing talent in that one too, which is kind of, I suppose, a space horror. It's kind of, it feels like Event Horizon to a certain extent. Great in that one too. We also got Nathan Jones. That's right. Nathan Jones from Fury Road and, of course, Troy and many other roles. Got to meet him a couple of years ago with Blair Hiscock of My Saga, the Star Wars podcast, where we met him and Toe Cutter and, of course, some of the other actors from the original Mad Max. Amazing talent. He plays Rico in this one as well. Angus Sampson as the voice of Goro. Now, Angus Sampson, folks. Now, there is a name for Australians going back 30 years to a TV show called Recovery on ABC TV, where Angus Sampson was regularly on there as a character on that. And he's always been great. He's a great actor, but he's also a really funny guy naturally as well. He was born in, brought up in Sydney, New South Wales, and he's been on TV, film. He's been in the comedy. He was in Winchester, which is a supernatural horror film. He was in Mad Max Fury Road, along with Nathan Jones, and of course, the toe cutter, Hugh Keysburn, the late, great, amazing Australian actor. And also, he was in Fargo Season 2 and The Mule as well. Great guy. Again, great actor. So the film, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, was brought up through, the different productions that were coming on, eventually building up towards what we've got now. And, obviously Warner Brothers trying to push this through and build this franchise. It's gone through many different creators, obviously to the point where we got James Wan signing on to be the producer around the mark of 2015. And it wasn't until, obviously, Greg Russo and McCoy, the director, really started to bring things together. And, of course, using the locations in South Australia, which are, again, really sparse and, large in terms of scale. And, again, that's why they used a quarry for the Outworld locations and some of those amazing vistas. It worked because they're so deep and so, you put a human, character or anything that's a scale just shows it's something not only otherworldly, but old, ancient, and that's what's so good about it too. The cast obviously came together with a lot of amazing stunt team as well involved in it too, and obviously the filming's just really pushed it all together. The big thing using, obviously too, the Panavision anamorphic lenses they used, along with, obviously shooting this to AMD-B and IMAX screening as well. Really, really seems to have done it. And it looks good, folks. I mean, it really, if you got the Blu-ray or the 4K, I do believe, is out as well, you're going to see those sorts of possibilities. Now, the producers definitely want sequels. Now, obviously, the end of the film really opens it up that we don't see his face, but we know that Johnny Cage is going to be involved in the next ones. And there's even been some words said the possibility that the next one will be more of a standalone Johnny Cage film. So, I mean, there could be, a way to bring that sort of world into it too, the sort of celebrity fighter sort of idea in it too. But what I love about this one is, again, it's kind of reminds me of, reboots, or in this case, a revisiting of the idea of the, a certain franchise, We've had a lot of attempts at getting things right in other franchises before and not quite hitting it like this one does. This is the Casino Royale of Mortal Kombat, and it is like that, or Batman Begins, or even the Kelvinverse Star Trek film from 2009. This is an amazing film. It's 5 out of 5, folks. It hits, its mark. It fires on all cylinders. It is what you want from a video game adaptation.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go on to the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.